Hi, welcome to Introducing AI. My name is Martin Kern. I'm joined today with Amy Nicholson. Hi, Amy.
Hi Martin, you
I'm
okay?
very good, thank you. Very good. What are we going to talk about today, Amy?
Today is all about what's called What the Data, but
Okay.
it's all about data. It's all about data in the cloud, and what we can do to move data to intelligent action.
Okay, great. And it's about the things that we can do today, some of the products that are available today.
Absolutely. This whole series is obviously AI.
Yeah.
AI sometimes has a future aspect to it, but
Absolutely, yeah.
all of this stuff we can do right now, and we should right after this go and do it.
So immediately, as soon as this video is, not
Immediately.
before, but as soon as this video
No.
is finished,
Yeah.
go out there, sign up, and get some of
Absolutely.
this stuff up and running.
Yeah, this stuff's all there and we should definitely use it right now.
Okay, cool. So let's take it away. What are we going to look at?
Awesome. So, main thing we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about how data is changing. And we can
Okay.
also talk about a few stories because a lot of things with data is everyone thinks about all the nitty-gritty, but
Yeah.
actually the outcome is normally the most interesting part of what they've
Sure,
done with
yeah.
it. So we'll talk about a few stories and then we'll talk about actually what technology powered that, and deep dive into all the different elements. So the
Okay.
key thing I want you and obviously everyone else to take away from this is what we have on offer today. What they can use and what might be of interest to them. So
Great. Okay,
we should have
excellent.
a 101 type thing.
Great. Sounds great.
Awesome. So the graph of data, the world's data in some senses. In the past, obviously, we had analog. I'm going to show my age a little bit here, but I feel like I was on this like nice little like 90s change
Yeah.
basically from analog to digital. People always like, you didn't have tapes. It's like, I did have a
Did you
tape.
have
I
tapes,
did have
really?
tapes, yeah.
I find that hard to believe, but
Exactly, but
I
then we all moved into CDs,
yeah.
didn't we? And we had home computers, obviously the past sort of aim for Microsoft desktop on it, sorry, computer on everyone's desktop and
Yeah.
whatnot. And now we're moving to this more cloud-based world.
Sure, yeah.
So this graph obviously shows the huge explosion in not just digital data, but also internet connected data.
Right.
So data that has an IP address in some senses.
Okay, yeah.
Obviously, that mobile gap is huge as well, and we all know how mobile we are. I am attached to my phone, I'm attached to my different devices and whatnot, and it's great just to be able to do anything whenever I need to do it. And then obviously this huge explosion in cloud as well.
Sure,
So being
yeah.
able to actually access things from inside the cloud, not having everything stored where you are and stuff like that,
Absolutely, yeah.
is really, really powerful. But to be honest, we're quite far up this graph, so we're sort of 2015, well, 2017. And in a few years it's going to continue this huge burst
Yeah.
into the cloud. So what do we do with all this mass amounts of data? Well, there's a few stories where people have done something slightly different with the data, and I kind of wanted to press on some of these. So
Okay.
my first and my favorite one, I think.
I think this looks interesting. I'm intrigued to see what a cow's got to do with
There's a
data.
massive cow on the screen.
Yeah.
So this is the connected cow story. It kind of happened around 2015. We had our vice president of machine learning, Joseph Sirash. He spoke at Strata Hadoop conference, so one of the biggest data
Okay.
conferences. And he told the story of how Microsoft, Fujitsu, and a farmer in Japan kind of worked together to solve some really interesting but kind of edge of the technology forest, if you want to call it that,
Okay.
problems. So this is a cow, and
Yeah.
basically this farmer kind of had this idea of doing some research, so they did it alongside researchers as well, to find out a bit more about how he could be more efficient with his herd.
Okay,
So,
right.
it's one of the oldest industries, right? But actually they started looking at IoT, so Internet of Things,
Yeah.
and they basically strapped a pedometer to a cow's legs. So this farmer had a field full of cows and they put pedometers on
So
them.
it's more like IOC.
Internet of cows,
Yeah.
indeed,
Very
yeah,
good.
IOC.
Right.
I like it. We'll go with that next time as
Okay.
a connected cow. But
So this is
IOC.
just, so this isn't like an Apple Watch. This is
This
just
isn't
like,
like an Apple.
no.
No, they did not put anything expensive
Right.
or sort of or super intelligent in that sense. This is a pedometer,
Just a
like you used to get
basic
in cereal
standard,
boxes,
you're right.
basically.
Okay, cool.
Just
Yeah.
counting steps. And I was really surprised by this because in Internet of Things, we know what we're like. We try and like instrument everything
Yeah.
within an inch of its life sometimes. So it didn't have a heart rate monitor on him. We weren't trying to measure how much the cow sweat or something like
Yeah.
that. It was simple steps.
Just
That's
step
it.
counts. Right, okay.
Now, out of that data, they actually found some of the efficiencies they could make were around, it's going to sound a bit odd, but around artificial insemination. So
AI.
AI meets
Brilliant.
AI
Very
is kind of
good.
what Joseph goes with, and everyone has a good giggle
Yeah.
and stuff like that. But actually, it's like super interesting because a farmer works like all day. They're up super early. Couldn't do it myself, but they're up really, really early. They work hard all day. They're out and about and whatnot. And then actually, obviously, at night, things like this kind of happen.
Yeah.
And so is he meant to be like alert all night as well?
Okay.
So he was having some troubles kind of figuring out when the best time was for him to artificially inseminate his herd.
Okay.
Now, given the steps, they were able to basically say this data kind of drew on a graph. You could see that when was the prime time was actually when the steps were a lot higher. And then they found sort of from that point where that starts, 16 hours later is an optimum time for them to do
AI. So there's a correlation between movement and the right time to AI. Yeah. We'll just say AI, the correlation.
We'll just say, AI, yeah. which version do we mean? But and then basically one of the things they never expected to find out was actually at that optimal point over here, 16 hours later, if they did it before, they're more likely to get a female cow, and if they do it afterwards, they're more likely to get a male or a bull. And then they can control their herd. So he had so much more control over, you know, do you need to balance the herd? How was everyone doing in the herd? Stuff like that. It's just a strange story, amazing. Right, for data, but an incredible one where they really, really, you know, found some really interesting insights sort of thing.
Off such a simple device as well, such a basic, simple device. Doesn't have to be an expensive Raspberry Pi or something like that. Not that expensive.
You know, all of these sort of specifically made devices and boards and whatnot, this was super simple, and I think that's one of the nicest things to portray to everyone out there, that actually a lot of the data you potentially already have or something that's very simple can be, you can gain insight from it. So the cow story, do go and have a look at that. It's a great story. Next up is our connected drinks. So when I say Mars, what do you think of?
Mars bars.
Chocolate.
Yeah,
well actually Mars drinks is a brand as well. They actually have vending machines. And as part of this kind of data and connected data kind of element, it is interesting to see that Mars worked with a team of ours in Germany, and they were able to find out not just do efficiency and predictive maintenance around their vendor machines, they were actually able to start push that a little bit further. So they were able to start understanding why, when, how their customers were actually using their machine.
Okay.
They brought in so many different types of data, whether it was what events were happening, what the weather was like, what time of the day it was, what suppliers, what the, you know, the drinks machine was stocked with, and actually then understand, you know, can they make sure that they always have, you know, you don't want to go to a machine.
Never run out.
I know, you don't want to go to the machine and then there's always normal Coke. There's sometimes Coke Zero, but Diet Coke's always not there. Yeah. That's my favourite one, to be honest. So
I hate that thing when you sort of send a little, you sort of choose your selection, right, I'm going to go for 61, and you put 61, and it says sold out. Well, I've put 62 in, and that's sold out as well. It's one of the worst things about vending machines.
You just, you know, so you don't want that. What you want is to be able to go there, pick your choice. Picking it is the hardest bit of it. and then actually just be able to get. So they learned loads about their customers, but they are a very customer-focused business in general, to be honest. Okay. So it was interesting to see that they are data-driven, but they were actually able to push this a bit further and actually return these insights to their customers, which is really cool.
Excellent.
So a slightly different one, right? We were in farming. We're kind of in more retail here.
Yeah.
So if we go over to more industrial and engineering, obviously we're based here in the UK, so I thought I'd talk about Rolls-Royce.
Okay,
so
cool.
Rolls-Royce are obviously engine makers. They provide thousands of engines on planes across the world.
Yeah.
And Microsoft and Rolls-Royce kind of work together for them to be able to do more with their data.
Right.
They have thousands of sensors on each one of these engines, and actually they're just pumping out terabytes of data, you know, as they're flying wherever we want to go. And it's great, we can get all over the world now. But there's a lot around, they have a lot of spend on fuel. And fuel efficiency was one of their biggest things that they wanted to kind of, any kind of small, simple optimization in fuel efficiency could save them millions. So what they were able to do was kind of understand more of the data from all these different sensors on the engine.
Yeah.
But actually from that, one of the parts that I really like, this story is huge, definitely go to that link, aka.ms, CI customers, go and find the Rolls-Royce story, there's loads in this. But one of the bits I like was around fuel efficiency of when to wash the engine. So there's this like weird trade-off basically, a dirty engine burns more fuel, so that costs them more. But actually having an engine have any kind of downtime, be on the ground, costs money as well.
Yeah.
So there's this like trade-off piece where they had to figure out when was the optimal time to clean an engine and it not start to cost them money on fuel.
Yeah, sure.
So they were able to do this by crunching through lots and lots of data. They're able to keep like monitoring that, so each pilot is able to monitor it via sort of dashboards to be always up to date. So it's a really cool story of how they've done it from more of an industrial engineering point of view.
Yeah.
But actually, they've been able to sort of save and optimize on the fuel, but also on their costs.
Great. Okay.
So yeah, well, it's like a slightly different story right from the cow. Sure. But again, this just shows that every company is a data company, and every company needs to kind of look at what's going on in their data.
Great. Okay. Excellent.
So what are all these powered by, and what did we find out from some of these different stories? Well, one insight I thought when I was looking through these and chatting to different people was they all try and increase efficiency.
Yeah.
There's loads of parts of different businesses that, there's parts of every job almost, isn't there, that will sometimes feel a bit, like life admin type stuff.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to, take a bit of time to do it. If we can increase efficiency very quickly there, people can be more productive. You might be able to lower cost. Time is something that we can't change. So can we help to by increasing stuff?
Time is money, that old saying.
Yeah, exactly. So increasing efficiency is a real key one, and that seems to be where most people kind of start. Understanding your customers is a massive one. Whenever I talk to different customers about all their data solutions, it's interesting to find out how much they want to know about the customers.
Yeah.
And we potentially have that data, right? We share so much on social media. We will be asked for reviews on everything we buy. You always get, if you buy something from Amazon, you always get that one, like, can you review this product or something like that? And it's always good to go and do that verbatim feedback. Now, in the past, it was obviously very hard for people to trawl through it manually and say, right, how many? And what if you had thousands of reviews?
Mm.
Well, the way we've got being able to do text processing now has meant that this is so much quicker, so much easier, and a bit more, less manual sort of thing, a bit more automatic. So understanding your customers, I think lots of businesses who are doing this are finding a lot that their customer understanding, so who to put offers to and when, rather than just doing a splash offer.
Targeted,
I was going to say, like, someone sent me an offer about a lawnmower, I'm a bit like, no, thank you. Whereas if they send me an offer about something that maybe I would be interested in, I'm terrible for it. I fall for it every single time.
Right.
I'll be straight to that website with their 10% off voucher to go and buy it. So, it does work, and it's great. And actually the customer feels like they're more understood as well.
Great. Okay.
And then my final insight was kind of this, a little ingenuity. So the cow one just personifies this totally, in the sense that, we sometimes try and fix problems that we already have, which is great, but actually there's this next step. So once we've done the efficiency piece, once we've understood our customers, is there something we can start pushing that more research boundary again and start trying to find something out that we maybe didn't know before? It takes a little bit of experimentation. Sometimes it might not pull off, but actually there's loads in our data that we could find out lots of stuff from.
Yeah.
So thinking outside the box is definitely something I'd say is a good idea.
A bit of creativity.
Yeah. And I think, I've seen there's lots of like innovation teams popping up in different businesses, and that's kind of their main, they have this kind of idea of being super creative and trying to take technology to the next level.
Yeah, I see this quite a lot. It's kind of like an incubation team almost.
Yeah.
Their whole brief is to go and they don't really have to turn a profit. They just have to look at interesting things to try and make big differences.
I was going to say, and this would fit in perfectly there.
Yeah.
So if there are any innovation teams out there, definitely go and look at your data, go and look at how it's all pulling together and see if there's anything interesting you could find out there. Awesome. So we've had some stories. We've talked about a few insights, but actually, where do they all come from? They all use different products that sit in our Cortana Intelligence stack.
Okay.
So Cortana Intelligence is our brand for our data platform as a whole. So our data platform sitting in the cloud in Microsoft Azure.
So this is an entirely different thing to Cortana, the digital assistant.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, brilliant. So Cortana is very well known. She's Master Chief's assistant. She is our own personal assistant on Windows devices. But Cortana Intelligence is more a suite of data services that we have in the cloud. I mean, they are very intelligent services, so I can see where
there is a vague connection there.
And so the main thing around all of these services is that kind of piece at the bottom of the slide, in some senses, where it's moving data, because we have loads of data. We have data coming from everywhere. But actually being able to move it into the cloud, store it, do some kind of processing on it, and then be able to put it out to some kind of visualization layer, some kind of action layer.
Yeah.
And it's that keyword action, to be honest, that I think is the most interesting part of it. we have lots of data. If we do some kind of analytics on it, we get intelligence, but we need to know what we're doing with that intelligence as well. Yeah. So it really is the end to end. All of these services will allow you to get from data to action in some way.
Great.
So I wanted to talk through, basically, given that platform, and we'll talk through some of the services in a second, what I'm seeing a lot as kind of the progression into this area. I kind of think customers are coming to me and saying, I understand, like, I know my data is really important, I just don't know where to start. Like, they're probably doing reporting already, they're probably doing some kind of analysis, maybe on like relational data or something like that, but they're potentially now starting to hit upper limits of stuff because the data is changing in variety, in volume, in the time it's coming at us, so it's velocity as well. And there's different ways now that we can actually use technologies to kind of change that. So if we have our data over on the left, then normally one of the first things people will look at is what happened in the past. And that's that kind of reporting piece. So people might have weekly reports, monthly reports. At this point, we're kind of moving to this dashboarding element now, where insights are real time, are always up to date. And it's kind of a common source of the truth in some senses. We all know those kinds of times when you might have a spreadsheet on your local device, and then I have a spreadsheet, and we come to the same meeting, and we have completely different data because we've both been editing it in different ways and stuff like that. So this is a great way kind of to have it all in the cloud, always up to date. Everyone knows they're reporting off the same information then. So what happened, always the first point of call, definitely have a look at some of the visualization stuff that we do. Next up, well, why did it happen? So given that we've got now got these sort of up-to-date dashboards, most people are giving power almost back to the domain user. The domain person knows all about their data. Whereas maybe your DBA or your data analyst who creates these reports, they do know a lot about their domain, but actually they're very focused on the data. And that's great. They know loads about data, they know how to structure it and stuff like that. But what you'll find is I have loads of customers asking me about, we'll make these reports on a weekly or monthly basis, we'll send them out, but then we get like lots of requests back saying, is there any chance you could just tweak this report very slightly for me, because I need this filter on it, or I need this view of the data, or something like this. This gets quite demanding on like a data analyst time sort of thing. So now we're finding again with these interactive dashboards, we can start to drill down into the insight ourselves.
So people can do it themselves rather than asking for new updates.
So if the data analyst looks after the data model behind this dashboard, still a lot of work to do there. Actually, that front end piece is then all about the sort of end user being able to find out the answers for themselves because they know all about that data.
This idea of business intelligence, I guess that's what it's been called.
Absolutely. Yeah, so business intelligence is still massive, still a huge part, loads of different events, loads of different meetups around this kind of stuff. So definitely something to go and talk to the community about as well. Lots of interest here. So if we're reporting, we know what happened, we know why it happened, can we start to look at the future? So what will happen? So with that predictive piece, and the predictive stuff is very exciting. It's something that we've maybe not done as much before, other than maybe like forecasting models. But there's loads now that we can basically say, given some kind of past data, can I start to predict what's going to happen in the future? Because we'll, I don't know, maybe, I always think we are quite spontaneous as humans. We can just make random decisions and do what we want. But in some senses, we're creatures of habit as well. So there is patterns in what we do. They will change over time. So we need to make sure this data is being refreshed. But actually using that historical data to find patterns is going to allow us to sort of figure out and potentially predict what might happen in the future.
And that's the key thing, the fact that if you, the data does change both seasonally, and it just changes for various random reasons. And
I was going to say, I mean, there's times when some, you know, some kind of action might be completely just not useful at all. But actually, I don't know, something like a, like you said, seasonality, maybe something at Christmas, maybe we all act slightly differently. I get very stressed when Christmas shopping. So actually, if someone can make it a bit easier for me at Christmas, maybe I will. But you know, in the summer, quite like to go around browsing, be outside, have a look at, you know, sort of window shops, stuff like that. It's that kind of idea. Don't then send me stuff maybe that's more online based. Maybe say, oh, if you go into the shop, if you have a shop presence, if you go into the shop today, you get 10% off or something like that.
I think about the cows, maybe they move less in the winter than they do the summer.
That'll they always say cows sit down when it's going to rain, don't they?
Yeah, so do we know if that's true? Does that come into it?
I was going to say. Maybe. So the weather, we need to bring the weather into that data model. We've got our instrumented cows, IOC, and we're pulling all that data together to try and predict what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
Will that cow sit down?
Who knows?
So we've got what happened, why did it happen, what will happen in the future, and what should I do? So that kind of recommendation, automation, that action part, really. Yeah. Given that I've been told what might potentially happen, can I do something that's going to mean that that will happen?
Yeah.
Or can I do something that will automate something happening?
Mm-hmm.
Loads of IoT scenarios are actually doing this, where the really, really simple one is, say, like temperature sensors in a room.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a temperature sensor and it goes above a certain amount, you know, get really hot, there's a lot of lights in here, something like that, the temperature sensor will go up. Actually, maybe when it hits a point, we need to turn the aircon on or something like that.
Yeah.
But then sometimes when you sit under an aircon and then you're absolutely freezing, everyone else is like, oh my God, I'm absolutely boiling. Maybe we should just turn off that aircon again, sort of thing. But it'd be nice if we didn't have to be like, oh, where's that thing on the wall again? Sure. Do you know what I mean? And kind of have to go and turn it up and then turn it right back down again.
Yeah.
If that's all automated, then the actual just temperature and ambient, we don't have to think about that, right?
Sure. Okay.
So all this kind of piece around automation just leads to general insight, really.
Okay, great.
So lots of different steps. Definitely good with starting with what happened. Lots of people start there. But actually, if we can start looking at why did it happen, what will happen, and what can we do about it, they're the kind of key pieces at the moment people are finding value from.
Okay.
Awesome. So we're back to Cortana Intelligence, because Cortana Intelligence can help us with doing some of these different things.
Right, okay.
So
these are the actual products, the actual bits of technology that we can
use. Yeah, okay. This is the services that sit as part of that much larger umbrella, basically.
Yeah.
And having that umbrella means that you can always know where to go to investigate these. So always go to Cortana Intelligence, put that into your favourite search engine.
Yeah.
But when you start to look at these different services, you'll just become acquainted with those names and kind of what they do.
Yeah.
So the main thing I wanted to do was kind of go through and kind of say what does each of these services do and how it might be useful.
Okay, great.
So, and hopefully we're going to have some word association game type stuff. So are you ready?
I'm ready, yeah.
So we have Cortana Intelligence, and the base of Cortana Intelligence is obviously Microsoft Azure.
Right.
So Microsoft Azure is our cloud platform.
Yeah.
You can bring storage, compute, networking capability. Lots of people at the moment are, say, running SQL Server on their own sort of tin on on-premise.
Yeah.
And they might actually just bring that, put it into a virtual machine in Azure, and be able to run it from there.
Okay.
You know, you can have multiple copies of that. It's very scalable, reliable, stuff like that.
Sure, yeah.
That's great. We're not going to cover too much on the virtual machine side of things here, because actually, on top of this platform, so that infrastructure as a service option, we have a lot of platform as a service options.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but the default by always is you've got storage, compute, and networking.
Yeah.
Please bring your data to the cloud type thing.
Okay, great.
Next up is one of our information management pieces. So Azure Data Catalog, it's not the most well-known one. You might not have heard of it, maybe, but Azure Data Catalog is great for big enterprises and all of their data.
Okay.
So in the past, enterprises would understand their data, and you kind of had tribal knowledge in different parts of the organization. So say we're over in one side of the organization, we have access to a certain data set. I know all about that data set.
Yeah.
But actually, say you're on a different side of the organization and you know all about your data set.
Sure,
we actually don't know about each other's. And in the world of actually bringing together all these different data sources, there's a lot of power in pulling them together. So Azure Data Catalog, it doesn't store your data, but what it does is mean you can actually tag that data and you can share the knowledge and understanding and documentation of that data.
So it's like an index of where all the data is.
Basically. Yeah. So then I could go to our company Azure Data Catalog. I could go in, have a look through and go, oh, actually, this might be a really useful data set. Maybe there's a contact person on it. Maybe there's someone who currently has a lot of knowledge about it.
Yeah.
But again, you don't have to worry when people leave the organization that data sets will just sort of erode. Yeah. It's a great way to pull them all together.
Okay, great.
So that's Azure Data Catalog. So if we have Microsoft Azure as host it, we'll have host it as a simple thing. I got this idea of this word association from one of our advanced analytics trainers. He works in our partner. His name's Buck Woody. He's always at all of the data events. You probably already know him if you've been to some of the data events. fantastic guy, and he just broke this down so well. So I'm going to borrow his insight because I thought it was brilliant. So Microsoft Azure is hosting platform. Yeah. We've got Azure Data Catalog. We'll call that Docket. So we're going to document against it.
Okay.
So we've got host it and dock it.
Yeah.
We're going the other way. So next up is Azure Data Factory. Azure Data Factory is kind of like an orchestration tool.
Right.
I think of it as like a supervisor of a team. And this is going to sound awful now. Please don't be offended if you're a supervisor. But if you have a team of people, the supervisor might say, okay, that person, can you do this? And send it to that person or something like that. They won't maybe physically do the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
They won't hold the activity sort of thing, but they'll actually just instrument when things happen. Maybe there's someone in your team that does the weekly report. Yeah. Can you make sure you do that weekly report on a weekly occurrence and send it out to the rest of this team?
Yeah.
I feel like Data Factory is exactly that. It's an orchestration tool where you can basically set it to it's a great way to move data into the cloud.
Right.
So if you have on-premise data, you can easily set up a schedule that will just take the data and put it into a cloud.
Okay. Right.
You can also set up different activities in there. So if you need to do a little bit of ETL with extract, transform, load, in the past, lots of people use things like stored procedures.
Right.
You can actually write that code. You can say, okay, every time you get a piece of data here, do some kind of ETL, and then put it into my nice clean database over here.
So it's all about moving data around, importing, moving, that kind of thing.
And we're finding that's more and more important because of the different types of data we have. So if it's real time, we might not use Data Factory.
Yeah.
If we're looking at doing maybe something that's a bit more batch, so once a day, once a week, even if it's once every sort of hour or something like that, Azure Data Factory is a really interesting solution for you to look at for that.
Right.
So we'll call Azure Data Factory Move It.
Move It, yeah.
So we've got host it, dock it, and move it.
Okay.
Keep going the wrong way. So next one up, another way to get data into the cloud, because that's the first question anyone asks me, is Azure Event Hubs.
Okay.
We had the supervisor kind of analogy.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a Hoover analogy for this one.
Right.
So mass Hoover for data, basically. Yeah. So hoovering that data into the cloud. You're potentially not bothered about ordering. So if one piece of data goes in front of the other, you might not be that bothered.
Yeah.
And you're potentially not worried about where the data came from. Just mass ingestion of data. We're going to look at the use of this in our orb that we did.
Yeah.
And basically, we were just pulling in loads of Twitter data.
Sure, yeah.
We weren't that bothered about if one tweet came in front of the other. But what we were bothered about was just that all of that data got into the cloud so we could analyze it.
Yeah.
A kind of partner technology that's not actually part of Cortana Intelligence Platform is our IoT hubs.
Okay.
So IoT is very, very much kind of what it says on the tin in some senses. If you have devices all over the place, you actually want to know more about where the data came from and actually be able to interact with that device and the cloud as well. So if something happens to that device, it gets compromised, it's sending unusual data packets, you can basically just say, I don't want you to send me data anymore because you're sending it into the cloud.
Right.
And you can have that kind of conversation with them.
Kind of disable it almost.
Yeah. So if you've got devices or you've got, you want to know about where the data came from, IoT Hub's a great one.
Okay.
If it's mainly just, say, like an RSS stream, social media, some kind of streaming data from an application, Event Hubs are a fantastic way to do that.
But they're both about bringing data in mass, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we had Move It for Azure Data Factory.
Yeah.
For this one, we're going to have Bring It.
Okay.
So we're going to bring it. So we had Host It, Data Catalog,
Docket,
Data Factory,
Move It,
and Azure Event Hubs.
Bring It. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Okay.
So am I going to have to remember all of these?
No, I won't test you with all of them. There's quite a lot. So we've moved out of our information management stage and we're moving into some of our data stores.
Okay.
So with our data stores, we have so many. And I think sometimes people have this illusion that we only store SQL data.
Right.
It's not the case at all.
Okay.
We have so many different data stores that people use and we don't want people to do like unnatural stuff with data.
Okay.
And that sounds really bad.
Yeah.
But like the amount of times people try to put data that is not relational into a SQL database that is relational and is designed for certain things. Yeah. It's sad. It's just not nice when you know, and you're kind of like, no, guys, we've got so much more to offer. So one of our first ones is actually quite new and is very relevant for this whole AI piece is actually our Azure Data Lake.
Okay.
So Data Lake has been like an analogy for a while, but actually being able to store huge, and I mean absolutely massive amounts of data in the cloud has become a real demand.
Yeah.
So I think of a data lake like basically like a normal lake. You kind of put lots of stuff in there, that there's water in there, okay, but it's kind of not tidied up, is it, and stuff like that. You wouldn't just go to a lake and potentially drink it sort of thing. You'd you go to a lake, it's got dirt in it. You know, depending on where you're from, there's potentially a shopping trolley in there and stuff like that. Yeah. But basically, data lake, you can put lots and lots of different things, so lots of different types of data in a data lake. And one of the nice things about this data lake is we almost don't have a limit on it.
Okay.
So a single file can be a petabyte in size, and you can go and stick that in there.
Yeah.
It's all backed by like blob storage and stuff like that, but we deal with all of that for you so that you don't have to worry about how we shard it and stuff like that. So data lake, loads and loads of data, lots of different types of data, maybe before you start tidying it up. Yeah. So you might want to go data coming in from lots of different applications.
Yeah.
Use Data Factory maybe, or Event Hubs, push that into a data lake.
So it's like a place to dump all your data effectively when it first arrives. Yeah.
But we don't want to turn into a data swamp as well. So if we don't need it in there, so say we go into archive that data, we might want to move it out of the data lake into an archive.
Okay.
It's kind of like a sit-in point, but the idea is that we want to do something with that data in the future.
Understood, So which one's that then, data lake?
Oh, data lake. So we're going to say store it.
Store it,
for
okay.
data lake, right. Store it. So, right, now all of our different types. So say we had this data lake and it was like an actual lake.
Yeah.
Well, if we start to then think of, we all know what a SQL database is.
Yeah.
So the SQL database is in Azure, it's an Azure SQL database. One of the main things I always get asked though is people have often used SQL Server on-premise or on a virtual machine, but they might have things with it like SQL Server analysis services, integration services, reporting services, as well as the core engine.
Okay.
Azure SQL database is the core engine and is all hosted in Azure, so you don't need to worry about all of the what machine it's running on, what size it is and stuff like that. You just have to worry about how much data you're putting into that database and how you're interacting with it.
Sure.
It's a very standard relational database.
Yeah.
But then we have this like the larger version, so when you get to the data warehousing approach, and people are kind of like, when do you use a data lake? When do you use a data warehouse?
Yeah.
Data lake is very much a big store for lots and lots of different types of data. But data warehouse is then like, given that lake is a filtered bottle of water.
So say
you've got something in that data lake, you might then do some kind of big data crunching on it, tidy it up, do some kind of, we call it ELT now, extract load transform with big data, and then you'll store it in your SQL data warehouse. So it's a nice way of basically saying your data warehouse is a very, very structured data source still, but it's great for doing batch processing, huge amounts of batch processing, because we remove the compute from the storage in this case.
Yeah.
And then one of our other ones is NoSQL. So we've talked a lot about relational data stores and big data stores, but actually DocumentDB is, I think the marketing term, I actually really like it. It's blazing fast NoSQL, blazing fast NoSQL data store. So NoSQL is often very, very useful for when the data can change its schema very quickly. People often have it for kind of user entered data. So, if you build out something on a website or something like that, I'm actually getting married soon. So I built a wedding website and I think that they might have potentially have a NoSQL database on the back end because I can add whatever I wish into this. And you know, someone else might not add a certain page that I have on my wedding website, but I will have.
Yeah.
So I feel like they might have a NoSQL kind of JSON document store type data.
Yeah.
And that's what DocumentDB is very good for.
Okay, all right.
So we'll call this related. So these are all the different types of data stores that we can use. So we've got information management, we've got big data stores, and now we're moving on to the sort of the advanced analytics piece.
Yeah.
So we've got something called Azure Machine Learning.
Okay.
Fantastic service. Platform as a service for machine learning, where you can come in there, build out your models, and then produce a web API from them.
Right.
And it's literally, you know, it sounds like a marketing term, like click next, but it genuinely is in some senses that once you've built that model, you can just couple of clicks and it's built you a whole web API for it.
So that allows application developers to actually just use the models directly from whatever platform they're building their application in.
Yes.
So it's web or mobile apps or bots, whatever it might be.
Because the person who's potentially using Azure Machine Learning is not going to be the same person who's going to be building your apps.
Yeah.
But you want that to surface in your apps because it looks, you know, it's incredible intelligence that people are building. But there used to be a bit of a, I don't know, a butting of heads in some senses against a data scientist and a developer.
Because
they'd be like, oh, I've coded something in R. And then, you know, your developer's kind of like, I don't even know what R is.
Yeah.
So then there's this like confusion and how on earth are they going to put this incredible machine learning algorithm? How are they going to put it into an application?
Yeah.
It's a great way and a really, really easy way to do it. So Azure Machine Learning, all about building out your machine learning models. Bring your data, choose your algorithm, build your model and deploy it.
Yeah.
So we'll call that Learn It.
Okay.
So that was more predictive data.
Yeah.
But do you recognize this little symbol?
He's an elephant.
He is an elephant.
it's
a Hadoop elephant. And he's often yellow. So that can sometimes confuse people. But he's often yellow. In this case, he's white. And this is for our version of Hadoop on Azure. It's called Azure HD Insight. And in some senses, what it is you can build a cluster on the fly in some senses. You can choose what size, how many machines you want, how many nodes, and start applying your big data queries against it.
Okay.
It's things you might have heard like MapReduce, stuff like that.
Right.
So being able to actually have a very, very tricky sort of equation calculation, something like that, on a lot of data.
Yeah.
And it will pass that to all of the different parallel processing and then come to you with a reduced result sort of thing. So Azure HD Insight, great way to spin up machines, do some kind of compute, and make sure you tear it back down again.
Okay.
Because of the it's high so compute, and it's a big, and especially if it's a big cluster, it can be quite costly.
Sure.
But the idea is that you don't have to actually host this yourself.
Yeah, I was going to say, the great thing is you can turn it off, and you can, once you've used it, turn it off and not have to pay for it all the time.
Whereas in the past, it was really interesting because like big data was almost just selected for really big companies and you know, because they could afford the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Now that's not the case. If you need to do some kind of big data, the cloud is your friend.
Yeah. Okay, great.
So
it's basically Hadoop on Azure.
Is the key piece here. And we'll call that Scale It.
Okay.
Massive. Our final piece, so we did predictive, bit of big data there, and actually now we're gonna look at real time analytics.
Okay.
So Azure Stream Analytics is a great way. In Azure HD Insight, some people use something called Storm, which is open source, very, very widely used for real-time data and being able to do calculations across it. There's quite a high barrier to entry if you don't already have those skills.
Right.
So for those who already have SQL skills, Azure Stream Analytics is a really nice solution for real-time data processing.
Okay.
So you can write a T-SQL query against just basically over your data. So say you've got your streaming data coming in, you write the query on top of it, and the query does kind of window in for you.
Right.
So it's a really, really, really quick and simple way to connect an input and an output, write a query, and then you can start aggregating over your data in real time.
Real time, okay, great.
So we'll call this Stream It.
Stream It.
So Azure Machine Learning?
Learn It.
Yeah. Our friendly Hadoop Elephant?
Scale It,
it's massive. Yeah. And Azure Stream Analytics?
Stream It.
Nice.
Okay. Oh, I'm learning something.
You're doing really, really well. So we talked a bit about reporting and interactive dashboards.
Yeah.
Another nice piece of this is we've kind of moved from platform information management, we have places to store our data, we're analyzing our data, we don't want to forget that last piece.
Mm.
So many people forget the last piece. The last piece is obviously being able to get anyone to understand the output of it. So Power BI is a fantastic visualization tool where you can build out interactive dashboards so that your end user, your domain user, totally understands the data. They don't have to worry about how it got to that place. They're able to just click around, get their own insights, and actually be able to understand their business and their data much more.
Yeah, so this is where the sort of, this is really where the BI side of it comes into.
Very much, yeah. It's a fantastic tool. They have a brilliant community around it as well. So they get heavily tested, that engineering team, mainly because the community is so, so great. Actually, when there's new things coming out, it's always tested. They're always taking on feedback. So definitely go and have a look at Power BI. Cool. So we'll call that See It, because we can see it. And then our top piece is all of our sort of new, I mean, I think we've had a talk, right, on bots and cognitive, And one of the key things here is Cortana, our cognitive services, so our prepackaged intelligent APIs that do things such as computer vision, speech translation, video analysis and everything, as well as our bots. Bots are obviously a huge thing at the moment. Great ways to be able to interact with your customers and solve quick problems, frequently asked questions, stuff like that. So these are all ways to surface data.
Sure.
So we have Power BI, which is very much the BI way of doing it. But actually, there's so many new ways that we can start to interact with this, this kind of data insight and get the insight when we need it. So we'll call that Say It, because we have to talk or send something to it.
Sure. But this could just as easily be your traditional kind of web applications, mobile applications as well. Yeah, it doesn't have to be the latest. You can bring AI into anything, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was going to say, so a lot of this, some of it you need very specific skills, but the stuff at the top is very, very much developer-oriented and is great for people just to be able to infuse some kind of intelligence into their applications.
Yeah, great. Fantastic.
So loads there, right? Yeah. So hopefully my word association game will be a simple and quick way for people to be able to say, okay, what have we got? We've got host it, dock it, move it, bring it, store it, relate it, learn it, scale it, stream it, and then see it and say it at the top. So take a screenshot now of your screen. This is something to keep. This is the
cut out and keep guide.
Cut out and keep guide, definitely, of a quick and simple way of word sort of association to understand some of these services, because there is a lot in there. Now, that kind of nicely takes me onto a little demo of of how we built basically some of these services together. So basically I have this web application, actually in fact you built it with our fantastic orb of intelligence there, and I'm putting in some tweets. One of them's a really, really bad one, so it's like, I've never seen such terrible nonsense in my life.
It's very negative sentiment.
Hopefully people aren't thinking that right now. And I've tweeted that. And basically what we're going to see in that top command line box there is actually that tweet got sent through our event hub, so our big hoover of data, and it's got a really low sentiment score. We actually sent it to cognitive services to get the sentiment score, and what we should see is actually it's gone through our stream analytics, and in the last 10 seconds there's been an average sentiment to that hashtag of 12, and then what we'll see is the orb then changes. So this is our feedback. The top one,
the colour reflects the sentiment, so negative being red.
So the top one brings our event hubs together. The bottom one is our stream analytics, and the actual orb is our front end. How do we get the data across? So now I'm actually sending two tweets, and I'm trying to send them in a 10-second period, which is a lot harder than you would think it would be. There was a couple of takes of this.
Turbo tweets.
Absolutely, turbo tweets. We're doing sentiment analysis on both of them. So we have a 92 there, and we have a 44. So we have a really high one, then we have a much lower one. So sort of average of that, we're going to be looking around the 60s, there we go, 68.
So kind of amber sort of colour shortly.
So if we... And there we go. We've got an immediate visual element. So what I quite like about this is that the data behind it, I'm only passing back one piece of data, but it tells us almost everything we need to know.
Yeah.
It feels like a KPI in some senses, some kind of arrow up or arrow down.
Yeah.
And then I send a great one. It does exactly the same thing in 1 second, and then we basically turn green again. So just a very, very quick demo of how you can pull together all of these different services that we've talked about to build out a whole cloud pipeline in the data space. So we use these different highlighted services.
Okay, the ones in green.
The ones in green. So we had our application, which was getting tweets from Twitter.
Yeah.
We passed them to an event hub, so we did bring it. We passed them then to Stream Analytics, where we start to window over that data and aggregate it.
Yeah.
But we also called into our machine learning function that was able to tell us what the sentiment of that data was. I actually passed it out to two pieces. We saw it being passed back to an event hub and then being visualized on our web client dashboard. But actually, I also sent it off to storage. A lot to do when we're looking at real-time data. It's not just a point in time. That data can be really useful retrospectively as well. So definitely store it off somewhere. We've got very, very cheap blob storage that you can go and pop that in, and it doesn't cost you really anything at all. So there's our nice architecture and how we built it out. This is all on GitHub and stuff like that. Search Orb of Intelligence, you'll probably find it, and you can build it out yourself.
Okay, great.
So Cortana Intelligence, there is loads in here. And one of the nice ways I quite like to break it down is by potential workload that people will be looking at.
Okay.
So we've talked a bit about traditional BI. You might use, sort of piece together these three different services, for example.
Yeah.
I always see Cortana Intelligence as a big jigsaw puzzle. And basically, we're just picking the pieces we want, or like a pick a mix, like a sweet shop,
yeah,
or something.
Sure.
You're picking the bits you want to build out what you wish to build. It's very unlikely you'll use everything. It's very unlikely you'll only use one thing. They do knit together very nicely. So with BI, we might bring it in via Data Factory, quite a batch process. We'll tidy it up do some ETL on it, and then we'll pass it to our nice filter bottle of water,
yeah,
SQL Data Warehouse. And then we'll point to our SQL Data Warehouse at our dashboards, and then we can see everything that's going on in our business from our dashboards. Traditional BI. But actually, when you start to look at predictive analytics, we might choose a different data store.
Sure.
We might choose two very different services depending on the different skill sets that we have.
Yeah.
Or we might even, as you said, kind of look at that more pre-packaged intelligence piece. Why create something that's already been
exactly,
done,
yeah,
right? We can add so much more flavor once we've actually got that intelligence already. So use some cognitive, store that data, and then do some kind of analysis on it yourself.
Yeah.
It's a really, really neat way of looking at this kind of stuff. Real-time analysis, again, completely different approach. Instead of looking at Data Factory, we might look at that real-time data.
Sure.
So then we'll maybe look at things like Stream Analytics or Storm or Spark, and actually apply that as the data is coming at us,
yeah,
rather than store it off, do a big batch of compute, and then turn it off. And then finally, high-scale data. So when we have huge amounts of data, understanding how we can crunch it most efficiently.
Yeah.
So whether that's data lake analytics and running jobs, or whether that's spinning up a whole cluster and using very, very well-known sort of Hadoop technologies.
Yeah.
So we have covered a whole load. We've talked about stories where data has been a really, really interesting data,
yeah,
stories. Go and look at the connected cow, it's fabulous. We've looked at different insights that people are getting from their data. We've looked at Cortana Intelligence and how it breaks down into services.
Yeah.
And then we've kind of shown how we can pull them together very, very quickly in different patterns.
Well, thank you for watching. I hope that's interesting for you. It certainly was for me. Join us next week for another episode of Introducing AI.